We're rolling on both. We got Pop 308 incoming. What's poppin', everybody? Hello and welcome to Popcorn Culture. My name is Ben Carlin and I am your host. Here with me today is my brother Jay, who will be in every episode.
I'm here, Ben. I made it. I'm back, and I have to say, can I vent for a moment?
You absolutely can, because because like literally this morning you walked in and I was like, I feel like there's some vents that need to be opened. Yeah, and I was gonna be like, I'm gonna ask you a question and you're going to say no, everything's fine. But I was going to be like, hey, is everything okay?
Oh, like right now? Is that what you were going to ask me?
My opening line was going to be like, hey, is everything okay? You doing all right?
This is a completely stupid vent that I've already even aired out there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Right. But my complaint is when I go swimming in the morning, Ben, that it is now cold outside, right? Which is creating layers of problems for my preparations for the day.
Okay.
Problem number one. It is way more convenient to simply wear my bathing suit and the Crocs straight into the gym so that I don't have to like wear a third pair of clothing like that I wore to the gym but then changed out of before I got into my work clothes.
All right. So I'm trying to imagine where you are now. So like you're driving from your house in the morning to the gym. You get there, you're just like walking out from your car in your swimming trunks and Crocs.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. That way when you get in, you can just basically throw your Crocs in the locker. Right.
Take my shirt off. Boom. Ready to go in the pool.
Boom. Bam. Yeah. No obstacles whatsoever.
Don't have to stop and change out of clothes that I'm already wearing into my swim trunks or anything like that.
I got you.
You know, in the meantime though, it's cold.
Yeah, it is.
And you're wearing Crocs and shorts, basically.
Right.
So there's that. Fortunately, pretty short walk into the gym.
Okay.
Not a huge problem. Get in there, swim. Swimming's feeling great. That's awesome. Do the sauna, all that. New problem is that then I got to change to get ready for work in the locker room.
Okay.
Right? Which is not like a big deal in the summer. But in the winter, the issue is that all the clothes, it's not winter yet, but all the clothes are like long sleeve and stuff, you know? And when you are in the humid locker room and everything's sticky and you just got out of the sauna, everything sticks and everything is really uncomfortable to put on.
Okay.
And when you get out of the sauna, there's like an effect where your body's still hot, turns out, you know?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's like when you take like the steak off the grill, like, and while it's like, you know, like resting, it's still cooking a little bit.
You're still cooking a little bit. Even if you go take a shower, even if that shower is cold, your body's still, you know, you have internally heated yourself.
Okay. Yeah.
You're going. So you're cooking. And now you're getting dressed in this like muggy place, putting on like long sleeves, and all of a sudden your body can't vent it out anymore. So you just stay hot. You know?
So you're not just venting, you're venting.
I need vents. I need to vent.
Wow. Okay. So I mean, is this gonna be like an upside down where it's like Jay shows up to work in the winter wearing like shorts and a t-shirt and we're all like, man, it's freezing outside. And you're like, Yeah, but it's hot in the sauna.
You know what I mean?
I know what you mean.
It's hot out there. I don't know. But then part of me is like, you know what? Maybe I just need to like, I don't need to change into like my work clothes yet. Change into something like looser to wear until you finish drying off or whatever.
Uh-huh.
Then you can change when you get to the office. But then it's like, what am I bringing? Like four pairs of clothes to the gym?
Right.
It's like getting ridiculous here.
This is a major commitment, and I can see where this would be frustrating. But who is your ventilation towards, or is it just a general like?
It's just like this is just the problem I'm working on right now.
It's just Jay versus temperatures.
It's just Jay versus locker room temperature versus the weather versus wanting to do the sauna.
Yeah, well, I understand that. Yeah. It's, I mean, it's a serious first world problem, I feel. But there is something about the inside of a locker room that is like unexpectedly just damp in the air.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, yeah. I understand that like we're connected to like a swimming pool where there's like a lot of like, you know, water inside where water's not usually inside in that magnitude.
Yeah.
However, it feels like there could be like, if I'm surprised that locker rooms don't have more of like a major dedicated dedicated dehumidification system attached to them.
Seems like maybe they even do, and it's just a lot to keep up with. Who knows?
Well, that's fair. I mean, imagine how much worse it could be.
You're contending with the many showers, with a sauna, a steam room, and the pool.
Right. So there's a lot.
Any sweat people are dragging in from their weightlifting or whatever, their basketballing or...
I mean, God forbid. You know.
Like, yeah.
People are contributing to this from their own bodies.
From their own bodies, even. Goodness. Locker rooms are like such a necessary evil, I think.
Yeah, well, they absolutely are.
But you need them. You have to have a place to change. You have to put your stuff somewhere. But they're not my favorite place. It's difficult to get ready in there.
I understand.
Yeah.
I understand.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you're feeling a little sticky though.
I'm okay now. Part of the other problem is that this is the first time I picked up these jeans since last year.
Oh.
Yeah. And let me tell you, they were like, I found them this morning and I was like, oh my God, I forgot I even had these jeans. They were like at the bottom of my stack of jeans.
Right.
And I put them on and I was like, I think I know why they were at the bottom. Because I didn't wear them a lot. Because they tight.
They look good.
Well, thank you. At least they look good. Yeah.
Form fitting.
Even. Exactly. I know. So, we're working them in. We're stretching them out, right?
What do you believe about the sentiment? This is something that editor Isabel, I believe, brought in. Because she goes by like the digital name Itchy Bell.
Yeah.
Which I like feels like the kind of thing that could have started as like sibling teasing kind of nickname, and then it's sort of like, okay, well, joke's on you, I'm just going to adopt it in your face, and now I've got this. But her thing is that you're either itchy or sweaty.
Oh,
you know, and so like the sentiment there is that you're either someone who has dry skin and therefore itchy, or you have someone who has wet skin and they're therefore sweaty.
Sounds like something she's telling herself to make herself feel better, because I'm not normally either.
You're not. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So you avoid both at all costs.
There is a medium.
Okay. There's just okay. So you don't have to be one or the.
Yeah, I don't think you have to be one or the other. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yes.
You can just be like moisturized. You know.
Moisturized.
You could be like, I don't know what the right word is. Hydrated?
I am of the opinion, the belief system that like, I'm sure this isn't the actual right term, that like chapstick, for example, is like a Ponzi scheme.
Oh, big chap.
Big chap.
You're talking about big chap?
Well, yes.
Well, here we go.
Yes, I'm a chapless Benjamin.
Chapless Ben on the pop today.
That's right.
Oh my gosh. I know exactly what you're trying to say though.
I know.
Which is that your jeans don't have backs. Yeah.
But exactly. Yeah. Something like that. Yeah. No. But no, I feel like the more chapstick that you use, the more you require chapstick.
I agree. I know the problem.
Yeah. And then I'm similarly like, you know, even just like everyday moisturizer is not something that I've ever been particularly good at. And I feel like a lot of people are like, oh my God, I feel so much better. I put on like my moisturizer, and I'm sort of like, I put on moisturizer and I feel the way you feel after getting out of the sauna, you know, where it's like, I'm all of a sudden like, well, now when I put my shirt on, it sticks to me.
Yeah. I know what you mean. Like, yes.
I mean, people love this. This is ideal.
This is like when we go to the beach or something, like if I'm in a sunscreen situation.
Sure.
Yeah. Like a lot of times, like we'll put the sunscreen on the kids, like at home even.
Right.
You know, so you don't have to like deal with it while we're like standing on the dock or, you know, getting on the boat or something like that. But then a lot of times, like while we're putting it on them, we'll just go ahead and throw it on myself. But then I'm like, now, but like, I feel like it'll be almost sometimes like the last thing we do before we go out the door. And I'm like, this is a bit of a problem because I put it on and then I put my shirt on. And then it's like, isn't the shirt going to like wipe some of the sunscreen off? Isn't it going to absorb it? And isn't it going to be sticky to me in the meantime? You know?
Exactly. Like, I mean, it's like if you were to put on sunscreen and then promptly pick up your like beach towel and like wipe your arms down, it feels like you would be using the beach towel to like remove the sunscreen.
That's exactly what it feels like.
Right.
And
your shirt is not but a very ineffective beach towel.
There have been mornings at the gym where I've completely forgotten my towel and I've been like, oh no, I'm gonna have to use a shirt. It's so ineffective.
I'm gonna have to use a shirt.
It's like, well, whatever shirt I wore to the gym is what I'm gonna have to be using to dry myself off now.
I bet that shirt becomes very sticky.
It becomes, yeah, not a pleasant shirt.
No, it's definitely like it needs to go through a wash cycle before next wear.
It definitely needs to go through a wash cycle, and in the meantime, I'm still not that dry.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like even with the towel, you're not that dry in the first place. So now you're using an even less effective towel in a very damp place.
It has occurred to me. So this is maybe my new tactic, is that perhaps I'm toweling wrong at the gym.
Oh.
Which sounds almost impossible.
Right. I mean, you know.
Like how many ways are there to do it?
Well, this is like the old, like, do you fold or wad your toilet paper conversation, which I remember the first time somebody brought this up and they told me that they folded their toilet paper. And I thought it was the absolute funniest thing ever. And then sure enough, the next time I went to the bathroom, I was like, well, I'm going to give it a whirl. Well,
I'm going to give it a whirl.
Turns out I'm a full-blown adopter.
Oh, wow. Full-blown adopter.
Yeah. Okay. Full-blown. I don't know what I'm trying to say here.
And yeah. Feels like there's a pun in there.
I'm a folder.
You're a folder these days.
But I was a water.
I'm a water to this day.
People can change.
People can change.
Right, right. Yeah. Have faith.
As long as you're, you know, getting the mess off, I think you're good.
Right. So, okay. So tell me about the ways in which you can towel appropriately and in which you can towel inappropriately.
Okay. So here's what I've been doing is that I bring my towel. I get there and I have my goggles, I'm a swimming cap, I'm a towel, and I'm wearing my Crocs, right? And I walk from my locker to the pool, and they have like little cubbies.
Okay.
Right? So then I put my Crocs in the cubby with my towel, and then I put on my swim cap and my goggles, and I swim.
Okay.
And then I get out, and then when I get out of the pool, as you might expect, I towel off.
Naturally, yeah.
Right, yeah.
It's an expected part of the process.
Expected part of the process.
It's also quite chilly otherwise.
Well, sure. But see, then what happens is I go into the locker room, and I...
Oh, shower.
No, I don't shower.
Oh, you don't shower.
Well, I mean, I do eventually. But I, you know, I put my like my cap and goggles back in the locker, and then I go sit in the sauna, and then I get all sweaty, and then I towel myself off when I get out of the sauna, and then I go take my shower. So by the time I get to the shower, it's possible that maybe I just didn't need to do the toweling off until I get out of the shower.
I think that there might be something to that.
Yeah.
Yeah. It feels like you're touching on the outside edges of the problem here.
Yeah. Maybe I am lessening the effectiveness of my towel.
Or, I mean, alternatively, maybe you adopt like a two-towel system, which I don't think would be absurd.
Well... Now we're backing up into a duffel bag volume management system problem.
You know, if anything, though, sometimes like I feel like my problem is when I go and do similar things at the gym, it's almost like my duffel bag has like one object in it. And I'm sort of like, why am I even using it like a duffel bag?
Right.
What I really need is like one of those like simple drawstring bags that they give you at like a
spike bag.
Yeah, like a spike bag. Yeah. Like career day. They're like, hey, would you like a complimentary like drawstring bag?
Yeah.
That's got like this local insurance sales office name on it. And it's blue with white font.
Yeah. See, that is not my problem because I have to put all my clothes in it that I'm going to change into for work.
Right.
So it's pretty full. Okay. Plus towel.
Yeah.
So, also, I don't know if you're aware of this. I'm venting all of my most smallest annoyances today.
Bring it on.
I'm sure you've heard it, Ben. My duffel bag is the squeakiest duffel bag on the planet.
You've probably
heard it wherever you're sitting.
I think it's the squeak heard around the world.
It's the squeak heard around the world.
Right. It's like the ceiling fan that like once per rotation is like...
Yeah. Effectively useless.
Yeah. Like, is it even blowing air down at me?
Right.
I don't even know.
What's worse, the heat or the sound?
Right. The sound.
The sound. Definitely the sound.
I hate the sound.
And yeah. Man, I don't have to wear the duffel bag. I don't have to carry it very far. Again, just from the car to the locker room and sometimes from the office to the car, but it drowns out all other sound with its squeaky squeaks.
Yeah. So basically what I'm hearing is I'm getting you a duffel bag for Christmas.
Apparently I need a new duffel bag and I need a better towel system. And I'm just like working through it here live on the pop. You're welcome.
Yeah, right. This is the thing people sign up for.
They absolutely do.
They're like, you know, they're like, this is now 6 months after this episode has gone live. I'm binging all of your episodes. You guys just came out of a total tearjerker and now you're talking about towels.
This is the glory of popcorn culture. Okay?
Right. We have
because,
range.
Because people have lives where they have real everyday small grievances, but also deep emotional complex life problems.
This is exactly
it. You have both often every single day. And sometimes we dive into one end of the pool and sometimes we dive into the other. And I didn't mean to make that a pool metaphor. Yeah.
And but yet, I did. It worked out well.
Exactly.
Yes. I love it. I love it. Okay. Perfect. Perfect. Well, anyway, we'll have to report back on how Jay's towel life continues.
Indeed.
Yes. Yes, indeed. It also reminds me of my early college days where like I went to college with like three towels and I feel like I made it probably like a full month in before I did laundry for the first time.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure that like some of the scent never exited my skin.
I see.
Yeah, because it was like it was there is something about like there like basic life skills that are so obvious and it's like and yet I don't know why I wasn't thinking about them. You know, like 18-year-old me wasn't like I feel like a fairly bright human being.
Right. Yeah.
It was like looking out for stuff, thinking about things, wondering about the world and what my place in it is and stuff. And yet it never really properly occurred to me how often you were supposed to like wash things like your towels.
I mean, they're like people talk about like girl math and stuff.
Oh, sure.
Let me tell you about boy math, listeners. Boy math is this. You get out of the shower from which you have just washed your entire body.
Right.
Right. You pick up a clean towel and you dry off clean water from your clean body and then you hang that towel back up.
Right. Exactly.
Therefore, that towel is still clean.
Right. What would have made it dirty? What, I just cleaned.
Where did it get dirty? Right. Exactly. That's boy math.
That's yeah. It's not correct.
It's and not exactly.
Yes. But no, I remember going through this and then it was sort of like it was really one of those things where as well, like you washed it and then like the next time I used the towel and it didn't smell like damp shower water, it was like, Oh,
it's better.
Ah,
I got it.
I see. Okay. Mm-hmm. You know, but like some less, I don't know. Why do we learn lessons so slowly for things that should be so obvious?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. Okay. Actually here, I'm going to share with you guys an embarrassing thing that happened to me.
All right. Lay it on
over us. last week because it was like, and here's the thing. I'm only sharing it with you because it is a thing that I felt like what was funny about it was how I felt like I was taking not a risk, but a like I thought I had a private moment to do something that I felt might be embarrassing, but then was immediately discovered in a way that made me so frustrated, but it was so fast that it was like comical.
So you were caught in a compromised position.
Let me explain.
Okay. Let me explain. You almost have to because I have no idea what's coming.
So last week we made our first ever K-pop Demon Hunter video.
Sure.
For the channel.
Right.
Right. And if you haven't seen the movie, it's super catchy and super fun. And when we were diving into it, I had to keep going through a million clips, which means I kept having to listen to all the songs. And, you know, the family likes the song, so we've been listening to it. But I also discovered that the Huntrix, the band in the movie, is, like, largely inspired by many a K-pop group, but also specifically the K-pop group Blackpink.
Okay.
So, and then one of the songs even sounds pretty similar to their, like, most famous song ever, which if you go, it's called Golly. It's because it's spelled really weird. It's da-da-da-da-do. Yeah, hit them with the da-da-da-da-do. That's what they do.
Okay.
Anyway, it's insanely... I know, it sounds silly. It's insanely popular. It's got like X billion views on YouTube.
That's unbelievable. Considering our entire channel has like 800 million
views. Yeah, less than a billion views.
Yeah. So for one song to have multiples of our whole... Like, you know, we have multiple... like years of career going on here. Like,
yeah.
So that's pretty unbelievable.
It's pretty crazy. It's pretty good. So I was listening to it though to research the video and I was like, oh my gosh, it's like, so it's like, I get it. It's like it's a really like fun, catchy, like song.
Okay.
It's like, I was like, okay, that was really fun. So I get in my car and I'm like, you know what? I really enjoyed that. The Blackpink song. So I'm just going to like, I'm going to try and listen to Blackpink on the way home.
Okay.
This is what I'm going to do. I'm just going to like try and listen to some of their other music, which is like, you know, I would say majority in Korean, you know.
Okay. Yeah, now, sure.
Not zero English. Some of them are more English than others, but like majority Korean. So like, and not only that, if you watch them, I mean, it's like a Korean girl. It's like a Korean girl group, you know.
Sure.
Like it's just like crazy high intensity pop music. Or whatever. So it's not, I'm probably not the target demographic.
Maybe not.
Is what I'm saying.
I mean, I'd be like, you know, but like, don't put people in boxes.
Exactly.
Right?
Don't put people in boxes. So I'm like, okay, I'm just going to like see what this is about because that I really liked that one song and it was really fun. So I turn it on and I load it up on Spotify in my car and I press play. And I mean, 3 seconds later, I get a phone call from my wife who, and this is what has happened. Is that she was also driving her car around with the boys.
Okay.
And she had been listening with them to something they wanted to listen to. And suddenly, out of nowhere, their song got paused and started playing Blackpink in the van. And so, because our Spotify's are connected. So I effectively changed the song
for them.
For them. And Beth immediately was like, oh my, and then like she immediately calls me 3 seconds later. She's like, are you listening to K-pop on your drive home? And I was like, oh my gosh.
What?
I was like so annoyed. I was like, ugh. Here I am just trying to have like a nice little safe space to experiment with a different style of music or something.
Right.
I get called out 3 seconds in.
The comfort of my own car.
The comfort of my own car by myself, not, you know, doing anything here. And I was like, oh my gosh, never mind. Never mind. Forget it.
Oh my gosh. This reminds me so much of that scene in Elemental where like they're like up in the hot air balloon and they like pass like the apple plants or whatever. Yes. It's like nothing weird going on here. Yeah, just a little pruning.
Just a little pruning. Yeah.
It's like dang it, dang it, dang it.
I know. It was just like, and then, you know, it just had to, you know, it was fine. I wasn't like really that embarrassed or anything, but I was like, yes, because I was listening to the soundtrack and I had to listen to this band and they were good. And anyway, that was, you know, that was my foray.
So do you feel like, have you since gotten a chance to listen to Blackpink?
I have. I've listened to it a little bit more. That one, I mean, did it do? Very, very catchy. I listened to that one a few times.
Okay.
Yeah. It gets stuck in your head. I'll tell you what.
I mean, I can only imagine. Yeah. The name like did it do.
Well, and especially because that's really the only part you can like understand that you can like sort of like repeat back.
Right, right.
Because I don't speak Korean.
Well, I understand. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Well, the big one for me right now is that there's like a very like viral sound. Which is like permeated its way to me despite the fact that I'm not on social media.
Yeah.
But it's this like doot 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 Max Verstappen.
Yeah.
Which is my favorite F1 driver.
F1 driver. Yeah.
It's I think that there is like a DJ or something that has like created this like edit or something that like goes, it's like a song about Max,
yeah,
effectively, but it plays so nicely with like all these like ridiculous, like, oh, you counted Max out? Like, no, no, no. You can't do that. And then they'll like play the song or whatever.
Right.
And it's like, oh my gosh. And like that's all. Like that's like the whole clip of like what I know from the song is the doot 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 Max Verstappen. Mm-hmm. And it will get like literally just lodged in my brain. So as soon as you started,
yeah.
Right. As soon as you started saying that, I was like, okay, I can see how this would happen.
Yeah.
This is gonna work well.
Yeah. Yes. So anyway, there you go. You know, check out Blackpink. Very catchy, very fun. Very high. I will tell you what, it is a different kind of music that I've listened to in terms of just like the sound of it.
Sure.
It is like really like high intensity.
Well, I mean, I could completely see you being like hooked on this because I know that it's like a phenomenon.
I mean, yeah, it's like having listened to very, very little, it's like, oh, I get it. I see what people are into.
Right.
Yeah.
It's like, this is fun.
It is fun. It is fun for sure. It is like a fun kind of music. So who knows? Maybe I'll branch out or maybe I won't. I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah. But I feel like I owe it to myself to like at least know what the phenomenon is about.
Oh, for sure.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I say it all the time, but I feel like it's very rarely the case that things amass such massive popularity, like, without good reason.
Right.
You know, like, it's easy to be that person who's trying to, like, rise above the popularity of something and be like too cool for school almost.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like there, and I get it. Like, you know, like, I know going back and like the, you know, it, like all the various phases of like music that we witnessed sort of like rise and fall throughout the years, and like, you know, there was like the Backstreet Boys, and like when they first came out they were like super popular and super catchy and everything, but then after like a few years of it, it was almost like the cooler thing was to like not like the Backstreet Boys, and then eventually like enough time had passed that it was sort of like, okay, but you guys have to agree this is a bop,
right? You exactly know? It's
like,
yeah,
it sort of bounces around. I even feel the same way like with like the band Green Day, which is like the first ever CD. We had a band or a CD called Green Day Dookie, which is like, I want to say it came out in like 1995. Our dad had the CD,
yeah,
and he had this big stereo system in our living room growing up. And I remember it was like one of the few bands where like I could actually like put the CD in and like listen to the music and know multitudes of songs.
Right.
But then I want to say going into like the end of my high school era, like we were listening to the song Boulevard of Broken Dreams, which is like the I walk a lonely road, the only one that,
yeah,
that
I
one.
Have ever known. Yeah.
Do-do.
Do-do.
Yeah. See, it's got it again. But like in the GMA used to listen to that song constantly. Like,
yeah.
We would just like drive around and we would just like belt it at like full volume, and it was so much fun. But it almost felt like there was like an irony to it, you know, like almost as if like we were like, oh my, yeah, we're listening to Green Day, can you believe it? But then, you know, like just the past couple of years ago, I was at like the When We Were Young Music Festival, and Green Day's one of the headliners, and it's like they came out and it's like, I mean, they were like the last band of the night. They sounded absolutely amazing. All of their songs are great. And it's just sort of like it's the same thing. It's like, it started off awesome. It sort of like went into this like weird layer of like perceptitude. And then it came out the other side just completely unscathed. And it's still kind of great.
There you go.
So yeah, I think that's how like these things go, where it's like, you might think you're too cool for K-pop, but it's very popular because it's good.
Right.
It is almost certainly like, without having listened, you know,
right,
you know, cover to cover on any of these albums. Or sure.
Yeah.
Like
certainly
that.
I right. have not done that.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. But
yeah,
I also could see a world where people who have been K-pop fans are going to feel like their space is being intruded upon.
I can guarantee you there are people who have liked K-pop for years who hate K-pop Demon Hunters because it has opened the gates for people they consider like non-fans or something.
Dude, this exact thing has happened, I believe, with F1 as well. Like,
yeah.
I think that there are people out there who have been like a fan of the sport for years and years and years and know who Michael Schumacher is and all this type of stuff. Like, you know, it's like the sport before Drive to Survive, which is this like Netflix docuseries that goes through and like follows each of the teams and sort of gives you like a very different, very dramatized version of the sport. And that's what Alice and I watched, like cover to cover. And we were like, man, we really like this. And so like once we caught up, we're like, well, now we're just going to have to start actually watching it in real time because we're out of seasons of Drive to Survive.
Right.
And F1's going on most of the time. It's
yeah.
like from like March through December or whatever. So it's a great sport to adopt because you kind of get to enjoy it most of the year.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So it works out really great. But I've definitely encountered quite a few people who I think are kind of like, oh yeah, you came in through the Drive to Survive gateway.
Yeah.
Like it's like
came in through that tunnel.
I was a fan before the docuseries.
Right, yeah,
you know,
I'm kind of like, you know.
And I mean, I understand it, you know, it's like, I think I went through a very similar thing when, like, Finding Nemo came out, where, like, I had been, you know, like, this, like, aquarium nerd for so long, and then all of a sudden, Finding Nemo pops up, and it's sort of like, oh boy, now everybody's talking about it.
Yeah, right, but what I would say to people is that, like, you know, don't gatekeep, it's okay.
Yeah,
more people like the thing you like, that's good.
Yes, the critical mass is always just going to continue to make the world and the community surrounding it that much more fun.
Right. Yeah,
so
just embrace the newcomer, show them the way.
That's right.
Yeah,
there you go.
Yeah,
all right, you ready for a little transition?
Yeah.
Popcorn.
Culture is sponsored by Shopify. Okay, so we're in what we may refer to as the end game, aka the holiday season. It can be a frantic time of year as a shopper, what with cold weather, busy parking lots, and stores full of people. But it wasn't until recently that I realized just how chaotic this season can be if you happen to be the vendor. In this case, of course, I'm speaking about our very own store, Carlin Brothers Mercantile. Shopify is huge this time of year when we are adding way more inventory than ever to the storefront to get you all loaded with just what you need in time for the holidays. And Shopify is packed with helpful AI tools that help write product descriptions, page headlines, and even enhance your product photography to help increase your reach during the busiest time of year. So if you want to give your customers the best experience possible this holiday season, you need Shopify. This Black Friday, join the thousands of new entrepreneurs hearing for the first time with Shopify. Sign up for your free trial today at shopify.com/poppop. That's shopify.com/pop. One last time for safety, shopify.com/poppop, and make this Black Friday one to remember. Popcorn Culture is sponsored by Uncommon Goods. Yo, the holidays are just around the corner, and this is my personal reminder that it is never too early to start your shopping. And boy howdy, I couldn't be more excited to recommend an annual stop on my own holiday shopping, Uncommon Goods. Ever since I earned my first paycheck in the fish and reptile department of a pet store, gift giving is something I've had a blast with. And my goal has always been to like find that item that somebody didn't even know they wanted, but ended up being like their favorite thing that year. And Uncommon Goods is like a cheat code for this. They curate an incredible collection of things that fit into that like rare crosshairs of actually useful, thoughtful, and wow, I've never seen this before. So here's my current recommendation for winning the holidays: deep sea sand art. We have one of these in our office, and our whole team is just constantly huddled around it, watching the calming, unique landscape it slowly makes throughout the day. Like, no joke, we have been obsessed with this thing. So check it out now. Thank me later. Shop early, have fun, and cross names off your list today to get 15% off your next gift. Go to uncommongoods.com/pop pop. That's uncommongoods.com/pop pop for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods. We're all out of the ordinary.
Okay, Jay, this has been on our Pop Doc for a stretch here, and we both actually have a topic related to empathy, but you have something that is titled Luke's Very Interesting Empathy.
Oh, yeah.
And I am deadly curious to know what must be going on with Luke's Very Interesting Empathy.
Well, okay, so...
Sounds like a title of a book.
Yeah. I mean, what's interesting about it is that Luke... cares, like, he loves stuff, you know,
like objects,
like objects, physical things. Yeah, like physical things,
very,
like
very tactile,
very very tactile, like guy loves getting new stuff, just whatever, as kids do, you know. But what is interesting to me is that, like, if it's Nick or Nate, like his brothers, like it is, you know, their stuff's basically his stuff, and his stuff is nobody's but his, and of these kind of things. Like he's very, like, very territorial about the, like, his own possessions, you know.
Right.
Those are the things he has control over, and I think that gives him like a sense of security and stuff like that.
Sure.
So there's that. However, there have been several occasions now, like when we were at the lake for Labor Day.
Yep.
This year. Our younger brother Tyler and his kids were there. And when I was at Pokemon Worlds, Tyler had texted me to ask if I could get some sort of like Worlds merchandise, like Pikachu something for Olivia because she loves Pikachu. And I was like, absolutely, no problem. And I got this little plush Pikachu wearing like a varsity jacket. It was like the whole Worlds thing. It was like exclusive to the event. I was like, boom, got it. Done. And then I brought it home, and of course my kids saw it, and I was like, no, this is for Olivia's birthday, so that's hers or whatever. And they were like, you know, Luke guy, he's like, okay. And then I brought it to her at the lake, and we gave it to her, and you know, they're all playing with it. But then in the packing up of everything and exiting the house, Olivia like left the Pikachu in one of the bedrooms.
Okay.
So now it has, now Tyler's back at his house, and we, after the trip, even though we already gave it to her, have ended up with the Pikachu back at our house.
Got it.
And I cannot tell you how much it like troubled Luke that Olivia did not have her toy.
Oh, like, right. Okay.
Like, he was like, just, you could tell it was like really upsetting him that like Olivia didn't have the thing we gave her. It's like, that's hers. We have to make sure we give it to her. Like, we have to give it to her. Like, it was like when it's just his brothers, the concern isn't there, but you can tell that like when it's someone outside of just those two, like his empathy cranks up and he's like, he knows how he would feel if he left a toy somewhere. So that must be how Olivia's feeling. And it's like, it is very concerning to him that she is feeling that way. And we need to justify this.
Okay. Yeah. I'm following this completely. That is a very interesting brand of empathy.
Yes. So similarly, when we got back from tour, someone had made some crocheted Harry Potter characters for us. So there was like a Gilderoy Lockhart and a Remus Lupin. And they made them for like me and you. But then we were going to, you know, I brought them home and I was like, oh, they both just ended up in my bag. And when I got them home, I was like, oh, yeah, this one was for, you know, I was fine giving it to the kids.
Sure.
I was like, oh yeah, this one's for you guys and this one's for Addison or whatever. So then like every single day when I would forget to bring the Lupin crochet back to the office, Luke, I would get home and he would be like, you forgot to bring Addie her toy, you know?
Right.
Just like,
right.
He was again, just like, oh no, like it's so bad that she doesn't have this thing.
Like she must be like lying in bed at night thinking like, you know, just right. like she's like so lonely.
Right.
Without this toy.
Right. Right. She doesn't even know she has it yet. But like, yeah. So this was like, it helped me understand though, like how much Luke cares about like his possessions.
Right.
Yeah. Because, and I don't think it's like a materialistic sort of thing. I do think it is like a, like these are mine, which and I know the rules about that. And I know like what control I have over the things I own and how it feels to not have the things I own. So like when my cousins don't have their things, it must be terrible for them.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Right. No, that's so interesting. It's so interesting. And I mean, it's really actually kind of like fascinating as well, because like I find it to be fairly relatable. Like
yeah.
What you just described.
Okay. Yeah.
Like I think, you know, like at different phases, you know, like, whether it would be like having fallen asleep without sending somebody like back a text, if like we were like texting at night and I like fell asleep like with my phone in my hand or something like that, you know, like it was the kind of thing like Rob would wake up the next morning and be like, oh my gosh, they must have just been laying there being like, wow, he just ghosted me, you know, like
right.
when realistically the obvious scenario is that I fell asleep. Like it's a completely, you know, anticipated thing if it's like 11 o'clock at night, you know, on a school right. night or something. And yet I would still wake up and be like, oh no. Like, because I think I would go through like a similar thing where it was like, well, how could you fall asleep while we were talking? Like,
I know,
you know, like, was like, it not captivating enough?
I know. Like, yeah. Like clearly whatever we were talking about wasn't interesting enough to keep you awake. You know?
Right. Right. Exactly. Right. Yeah. So it's like, I think that I have experienced different kinds of this same emotion before where I take like what my own feelings towards something may have been and like project them onto somebody else as if they interpret the world the same way. And it's really interesting to me as well to think of things like that, because it's like, it's the best you know is how you might respond to something. So like, you know, this is like where like for me, and I know you also have a note about this as well in the show notes, but I've always subscribed heavily to like the golden rule, just mm-hmm. as like my baseline, like version of like ethics, you mm-hmm. know, just basically treat other people the way that you want to be treated.
Yeah.
And it's like to try to mentally imagine a world where somebody emotionally responds to a situation differently from you can make the whole world feel like a giant mystery. Like if you assume that the way that you experience the world is not how other people feel the world, then it's like, then you have no insight.
Right.
You know, like it's very hard to figure out like what they must be feeling or because that's usually how like I feel like a sense of security. Like, so I'm very big on always like asking people like, hey, you doing okay? You doing okay? You doing okay? Like,
yeah,
I'm always trying to like make sure like, you know, where is everyone in the room that I'm at with emotionally at every point in time? Because that's usually dictating like how I'm also behaving.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, if you're down today, I don't want to be like excessively like exuberant, you know, or like, you know, like I walked in and I said, like, you know, like when we sat down, like the first thing I was going to ask you was like, hey, you doing all right? Like, you doing okay?
Uh-huh.
And you got this look on your brow right now, which is like, stop. I hate when you do this. I like
me. No. I'm just like, that's so interesting. Cause it's just like, you're like, oh, if someone was like, you know, like feeling like maybe down, I wouldn't want to be exuberant. And I kind of like, my immediate thought was like, no, I feel like I would want to be, because it would be like, let me like be a beacon of positivity for this down person.
Yeah. Like you try to find a way to like cheer them up by being like upbeat or excitable or something like that. Yeah. And I mean, I think that you're not wrong. Like there probably is a scenario where that would be the case, but it might depend on what it felt like the circumstance was. Like you're trying to figure out whether or not the person can be lifted, or if the thing that they're dealing with is bad enough to the point where they're not going to be lifted.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
right?
Unless that belief is just also a fallacy altogether. Where
there's no one who can't be lifted, Ben.
I mean, I think that's a very optimistic outlook, but I also feel like there's for the longest time I would have said that my stressors, and it's like when you look back on it, I can see that my stressors were all relative to what I had experienced at that phase of my life, to the point where I could be lifted, you know, by just being around friends or whatever. But now it's almost like the things that bring me down are the things that I'm usually like I have enough experience in life to know that like there's not an obvious way back up. Otherwise, this wouldn't be bothering me at all in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
It's like what bothers me is the fact that like I don't know the pathway back up to the surface.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like I have now found myself stuck.
Right.
Yeah.
I see. Okay. Well, let me bring up what I have written down then for the reverse golden rule.
I am curious about this. I know. Okay. Yeah. Because like my knee jerk when I read this was like, so if the golden rule is to treat others the way that you want to be treated, then the reverse golden rule would be don't treat others the way you don't want to be treated.
It would be almost like that's almost it. It would be treat yourself the way you treat others.
Treat yourself the way you treat. Okay. I got you.
There you go.
Treat yourself the way. Okay. So like chances are if somebody's come in and they're down on themselves, I would try to be encouraging and be like, you know, like you're saying, try to like uplift them.
Yeah.
You know, but then if I'm down, I'm usually pretty down on myself.
Right.
And it's like, if you were talking to you, you would encourage you.
Exactly.
Right now.
Exactly. I think you kind of say this sometimes where it's like, you'll talk to Allison. She'll be like, you know, what would you tell Addison if she came to you with this or whatever?
Yes.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I think that's sort of embodying sort of the same thing where it's like, you know, oh, you're being really hard on yourself, but if like Addison brought this to you, you wouldn't be really hard on her like this.
This is true. Yeah. Or how would you feel like if the way that you view yourself is how Addie ultimately grew up to view herself. And it would be like, oh, well, I don't want that.
Right. Yeah. So
that's a dangerous place.
Right. Yeah. It's like, don't reserve all your kindness only for other people, you know?
Okay. Okay. I like that. What stumbled you across this particular sentiment?
Oh, literally, I was watching the show Nobody Wants This last night.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And does this come up exactly, or is it like you surmised it from the show?
No, it comes up exactly.
Okay.
In terms of, well, hilariously, I mean, the show is about two sisters who have a podcast. So they're on the podcast and they're answering listener questions. And the premise for the show, if you don't know, which you should watch because it's one of my favorite shows. It's like so adorable and great. It is about Kristen Bell, who runs a podcast and with her sister. And she is like a very the podcast is about like relationships and stuff, but they're both like single women and they do like crazy stuff on dates and, you know, have train wreck, you know, stories and all this stuff.
Right. Like, right. You know, basically go out on the date this weekend so that next Monday when you go sit down to record, you have a story to tell.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
But anyway, she goes to like a dinner party and she meets one of her, you know, friends. And they start dating, and the wedge is that he is a Jewish rabbi and she is not religious at all.
Okay.
Right. So they actually, their chemistry is great. They're amazing together, but there is this like one thing that is sort of like the, they will have to deal with it at some point between them.
Okay.
But in the meantime, he is just like an incredibly super motivated, highly helpful rabbi for his temple, you know.
Sure.
So he happens to be overhearing them answering the questions, and he comes over and says, "Oh, can I help answer this one?" And he just sort of picks up the microphone and gives this very elegant answer about the golden rule and the inverse of it and why that applied to that situation, kind of thing. And I was like, "That was very good. I feel like Ben needs to hear that."
Yeah.
Cuz Ben's not always super nice to himself.
Yeah, no, not always. Which is like, you know, it's a constant contemplation as well. Like, I don't know why it's like that, you know. Like, I have oftentimes said before that, like, if I was ever like a home designer or a home builder or like a realtor or something like that, like, I would always want to like name the title of my company like Can't Fish Realty, because there's no catches. And like, you know, does that make sense?
Because there's no catch. Oh, there's no catches like in my policies or something.
No catches in my policies, and there's no catches like in the properties that like I would try to deliver to my customers or whatever.
Right.
Like, you know, like, because I remember when we were all like doing like our first time home buying, it's almost always like, oh, well, like, I really like this house, except like the yard's really small, or like this one's absolutely perfect, but like, you know, the neighborhood's a little wanting, or, you know, like there's always like this, that, the other, like, ah, you know, this one's exactly perfect. Perfect, but it doesn't have like a primary suite or whatever. So
yeah.
The idea would be to like go through and just try to take like all the classic boxes that everybody like wants to tick and make sure that you're ticking every single one of them.
Sure.
And I think that like as a person, like that's so much of like what I do with my personality. Like it's like I never want to be the wrong flavor for anyone in the room, you know. So it's like you're constantly trying to figure out like how to go through and make sure that like it's like I don't want to be perceived as like annoying by anyone,
mm-hmm,
ever,
right?
You know, and it's like
very people pleasery,
but like, you know, that could be the case where it's almost like 99% of people like this bit you do, and one of them who's very vocal doesn't, mm-hmm, you know. And it's sort of like your humor. I say a bit. What I mean is humor, like, you know, like my sense of humor or something. And so it's like, well, let me just turn off my humor altogether, because then I'm not bothering that one person, and like the absence of my humor feels like less of a like an impact on those people who enjoy it. It's like, you know, whether they enjoyed it is like one thing. To take it away, it's sort of like, well, that's no problem. Like, you know, if it's just not there at all, then I'm not annoying anybody.
Right.
So may as well, like, not annoy anybody.
Yeah, but then the food doesn't taste good at all.
Well, no.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a problem. But I don't know where or, like, I think this is, like, the quest that I'm constantly on, like,
right,
with all my various bits of, like, self-reflection and everything. It's like, why am I, like, this? Why do I have such a hard time imagining how I am perceived by others?
Right.
You know, because I think that that's like, it really does become this very like external, like locus of control, like where, you know, where I get my happiness from, or like my feedback loop gets completed or whatever the case may be, all comes from other people.
Mm-hmm.
And like, you know, it's like, even like when I go to like therapy and stuff, like we'll have lots of conversations about this exact type of problem where it's like, you need to bring that inside. You need to make sure that like how you're viewing yourself is not being like, it's not determined based on like your reflection in the eyes of others, but rather like your reflection in the eyes of yourself.
Right. Yes. Like, you're so concerned that you're going to be the right flavor for other people, but then what do you taste like? You know?
Oh yes. I mean,
right. Yeah. This is the whole like embrace your spikes thing.
It really is. Yeah. Yes. I mean, I was actually having a conversation over the weekend. We had Addison's birthday party and one of Alice's best friends was there. And we were both kind of having a conversation about like masking and stuff like that. And I was like, you know, sometimes I don't know whether or not like I met like a fork in the road somewhere along the way, and I needed to be a certain kind of person that like was working for the most number of people. And I left my former self just stranded at that fork in the road, mm-hmm. and I just like left them there.
Right.
You know, when it's like they're still back there.
Right.
Like whatever happened to that guy, you know, mm-hmm. it's like, but you know, it's like, I think part of like where the criticism comes from towards that version of myself was oftentimes like, I think that, and this was like always true about me. Like, I think that I don't mind having like deeper, more significant conversations or just getting like right to the heart of it or, you know, like whatever the case may be. So like, I think once we were at like one of our good friend's birthday parties and his ex-girlfriend showed up at the party.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm pretty sure like what my tactic was for communicating with this particular person is like, why'd you guys break up? You know, like, like, you know, it was almost like my, like it makes me worry that my true self is just inappropriate, you know, like as if like what I've had to like I don't have these like walls of inhibition. I had to like learn them from other people because like, I think for me, it was just sort of like, I bet that's like, you're here at this party where he also is, like, that must be uncomfortable for you. This is probably the top thing on your mind. Let's talk about that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, and that's probably projecting a little bit as well. Maybe she was just like, oh, it's a party.
Right.
We're
sure.
In college, you know,
yeah,
it's a fun thing I can go do.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I think on some level, like, you know, you walk away from that conversation, you have conversations with other people who witness that conversation and like, what were you thinking? You know?
Uh-huh.
And it was like, I don't know. I thought that was like what we should talk about. Like, you know, like I didn't view it as inappropriate. I had to learn it was inappropriate and then like adapt the behavior from that,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Right. But that's just like testing boundaries. And also I was at that party too. And I don't think that it was that inappropriate.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Well, there's that. Another one that I know that came across very weird that like when I look back on my former self was so like I've talked about this before, like you and your family are religious and my family, I am not, it, like as a person, like it's just never been something I've found for myself. But I remember it was probably, I bet I was like in my mid 20s or something. And we were having a conversation because we were all becoming like young professionals. And it was the first time that the idea of tithing had ever been explained to me,
mm-hmm.
like this idea that you would give like a percentage of your income to whatever religious facility that you are with.
Right. Yeah.
You know? And like, I remember hearing the amount that it was and like me, even just as like an individual, like still trying to figure out like how finances work as like an adult and like how to like save for things and buy things and, you know, start to like build, you know, the life around you. And I heard the amount that people contribute. And I remember just being like genuinely shocked. Like it's not something that like I would pass judgment for at all. But I remember in the moment discovering it and being like, what? That's a lot, you mm-hmm. know, like that's a really significant, you know, like contribution. And that was another one where it was like, I feel like it was a very like genuine piece of myself. And yet it also came across as like very tone deaf, I think, in that moment, because it was like, how do you not know this? Like, how, like, why, or why are you so caught off guard? Or why would you say something when this is deeply important to people?
Well, I still don't think it's like that crazy or anything.
Right.
Like, I think you're giving yourself, like a hard time.
Yes.
For sure. Because if you're unfamiliar with it, then, you know, then you're unfamiliar with it and it probably does catch you off guard. You know, like you don't understand like what, because it does feel like a lot of money. And if you don't go to church or anything, it probably feels like why, you know?
Sure. Right. And I mean, and like, you know, obviously there's certain things, you know, I think we've since that I've been able to, you know, much more understand. The church provides lots of services to its
Congregation.
To his congregation.
Right. Yes.
Like, there's, you know, so it's kind of like everybody's putting, you know, dollars into a communal pot that then helps the people that are there or possibly even people outside of that.
Yes to both. Yes.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so that's generally, you know, a good thing. You know, it's kind of like that's part of what community does is like, you know, help each other. And that makes sense.
Right. And then it's like also like if you're, you know, if you're contributing to it financially, you're probably more personally invested in, you know, being there and being a part of that community and stuff like that. And,
also true.
You know, it's just all helps building with stuff like that. And that's just, yeah, we don't have to get into tithing or anything.
No. Yeah, that's not the subject of the conversation. It's mostly just that like I remember these moments, like they stand out to me, I think, because it was, they all like kind of filed me down, that's like filed like physically, you know, into like the person that like I would like slowly become, you know, because there's nothing like the first time you ever learn something, it feels new, it feels groundbreaking, it like, you know, cracks your mind open a little bit to see the world with a fresh perspective. But then once you know it, it can sometimes be surprising that you ever didn't know it,
right?
And that can be strange as well. Like, so even, you know, throughout the course of doing, you know, like popcorn culture, I feel like there's plenty of like psychological terms that I've like stumbled across that like I've only just like come to find out are just like pretty commonplace terms. Like, it probably wouldn't have been that long ago that I stumbled across the Wikipedia page for like masking for the first time, being like, whoa, I do this. This is weird. It's like I'm like reading. It's like somebody knows like my dark secret, and right, there's a Wikipedia page about it.
Right.
You know, like, that's wild.
Yeah.
You know, and like, to me, that's groundbreaking. And then all of a sudden you start to have conversations with people out in the world who are at all invested in mental health. And masking is like a very like, you know, fundamental term.
Yeah.
You know,
but like, it's okay to like learn about things. And I think even as you're saying that, like, plenty of people know, have no idea what masking is, or you can't expect everyone to know literally everything.
Right.
And people get into way more trouble assuming that everyone is extremely well informed on every single thing than like assuming they're not, because it's like, when you like, this is where like I feel like a lot of like political things get like crazy. It's like, how, like, if you like, you know, don't you know just so much about this one thing, like, how could you not? Everyone knows this. And it's like, no, they don't know it.
Sure.
You know, like, people don't know everything about every single thing. And, you know, like, it's good that you know about masking, and maybe a lot of people know about it, but I bet way more people don't. And you can't feel bad for having not known something in the past. You just have to accept that now I know it, and now I can have a conversation about it. But it's not like you've offended everyone or seem stupid because you didn't know about it beforehand.
Right. I know. Well, I mean, and it's usually things that feel like they kind of like hit me in my core that I would say are like more significant in this regard. Or sometimes it's even just like the wondering where it's like, I went through my whole 20s without figuring this out. Like, you know, why wouldn't it come up?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then some of it's also sort of like the question of like the zeitgeist, like the greater sense of now. You know, where it's like, as mental health has sort of like gone through and like become much, well, I say this as if it's definitely true. I would say it is at least true for our corner of the internet and the way that we participate in it. We try to be very open about mental health.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's something that you and I both prioritize pretty heavily.
Yep.
And, you know, put a lot of energy and focus into and that type of thing. But Alice and I were having a conversation over the weekend about like the first time I ever like admitted to somebody that I was like depressed, and how to me it felt like coming clean on like a deep, dark secret.
Mm-hmm.
Like I can't believe
it was a very shameful thing.
Like, it was like, I can't believe I'm about to tell you this truth about myself.
Right.
You know, it was like, it's like this is like max scale vulnerability.
Mm-hmm.
Now I feel like if I ran into like an old high school friend on the street and we were just having like a 3 minutes of exchange, I'm like, well, you know how depression is, right?
Right. Yeah.
Anxiety. We all have it.
We all have it. Yeah.
Right. So I think, you know, layers of more openness, and possibly what's happening is that, like, you know, you're vibrating at the frequency that society and that zeitgeist is vibrating at. And therefore, like, you're, you know, like, maybe we are all learning these things sort of collectively at the same time, because it's word is getting out more, you know, it's like these types of terms are being thrown around more publicly, more openly, you know, people are having more discussions and that type of thing.
Yeah.
And therefore maybe that's how you ultimately come to learn it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that, you know, like the information about mental health is like way more, like accessible, and the language about how to discuss it is way more accessible. But then with that also comes people who feel like, because it's more accessible, everyone needs to, it's everyone's responsibility to know every single thing about every single thing all the time. And it's like, it can give you that sense of like imposter syndrome when suddenly like you've come across something that you don't know, when other people seem like they're really extremely well versed in this thing as well.
Right. Right. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. So I don't know. I don't know how exactly we got to this piece of the conversation, but largely I think it's just like when I'm like reviewing past versions of myself, I think, yeah, there's that like piece of like, well, I don't want to make like this same mistake again. So like, I want to try to like digest what happened, how I felt about it, how the people in the room around me like felt, because like, you know, this is like a thing that I have written down, is like, I think, and again, like, you know, in therapy, this is the kind of thing that like other people would have said, is that like, you know, there's the potential ability within me to be like an empath, where it's like, I think I'm better at detecting the emotions of the people in the room, maybe than just like simply average. Like, it's something I'm paying like very strict attention to. Mm-hmm. I'm looking to the way that like body language is, like, you know, how people are holding themselves, what they're talking about, what they keep gravitating back towards, you know, like whether they seem like happy, optimistic, pessimistic, like all these types of things. Like I am every room I'm in, I'm always trying to like feel out for like where everyone's at.
Mm-hmm.
And one, I mean, that can take a lot. Two, it means that you're very aware of the way that like you're potentially impacting others, but probably in a way that's almost like over assuming your impact. Like, other people might just be dealing with other stressful things, and even if you possibly said the wrong thing around them on any given day, it's like it probably wasn't as severe as just the weight of their other responsibilities.
Mm-hmm.
You know, on there. But one of the things that I tend to feel with that though is like, again, I've historically used like analogies as like a way to try to communicate like feelings, or even to like compare situations. So like, if you were two different people who spoke different languages and you were attempting to get like baseline for how to communicate with one another,
mm-hmm.
chances are, like, if you're trying to teach somebody yes and no, you're going to come up with like nods, you know? So like maybe you like smile and shake your head up and down, and it's like, this means yes, thumbs up, yes. And it's like, you can start to like translate the meaning into like other,
right,
you know, different things.
Smile, thumbs up, smile, universal language.
Yes, exactly.
Start
yes.
there.
Yes. So smile works out well, because we all smile the same way.
Yeah.
You know, and we all do it. But you know, then like, I think a lot of times what may happen, like if me and Alice are, for example, like having a conversation, is like, if she is experiencing an emotion that I had a very difficult time conveying to her in the past, a lot of times, like, I will almost like become like excited if Alice is like experiencing like, say, jealousy or something,
mm-hmm.
because I'm like, oh my gosh, yes, this, like, you, like, this is the pantomime version. I know that what you're experiencing is jealousy. Remember 3 months ago when what I was trying to explain to you that you couldn't understand about what I was feeling in that moment, these are the same things.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's like that constant, like there's the reality behind the fact that they're not exactly the same, because no two situations are ever exactly the right. same. So it's like, chances are there's subtle differences in all the people involved and like whatever may be going on. And it's like, maybe this brand of jealousy is more attached to these details than this one is more attached to these details.
Right. Everyone's going
to
be so defensive. Oh, no. My jealousy was more, way more like, you know, like justifiable. This one is ridiculous. You didn't feel the same way because I felt the way for good reasons and you feel this way for bad reasons.
Precisely.
Yeah.
Yes. And I oftentimes feel like that's what ends up happening, is that it's almost like I am, like part of the time it's almost like you have like these like translation issues, and so you're constantly walking around in the world and you're like, it's like, I'm having such a hard time conveying what I am feeling to somebody. And then when they feel a certain way, it's almost like, I want to be like, this, let's write this down, let's put it in the dictionary of our language of emotional feelings, because now we know how to talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, now we can say, like, this is that feeling.
Yeah.
You know? But so then a lot of times, yeah, I'll end up using like analogies as like a way to try to communicate these things to people. And I feel like a lot of times the analogies just make people angry.
Right. Because like, there's always like a hole to poke in an analogy.
That's exactly kind of it. Thing. It's like, it's yeah. not like that because of these reasons.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's weird because like, you know, like even that, you know, like you walk away from it if you're me and you're like, well, people didn't like that. But then it's sort of like, well, do I stop trying to translate the sensations? Like, is it like the wrong approach altogether?
I don't know. You are determined to have more conversations about feelings than most people.
Yeah, there
is. So there could be that.
Yeah. Right, right. Most people are like, okay, we've covered this.
Right, sure.
Yeah.
But that's not like necessarily a bad thing or anything. I don't know what the answer is. I mean, I don't find your analogies that confusing most of the time.
Okay, well, that's good.
Yeah.
That's good. Yeah. So anyway, I feel like we had some funny overlapping conversational topics here in our show notes as we came into it for today's discussion.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah.
Yep.
Empathy.
It's a good thing.
It's a good thing. Oh man. Otherwise, I also turned 36 over the weekend.
You did. Happy birthday.
Thank you. Yeah. Yes, and Addison fittingly also turned 4.
There you go.
So today together we are 40.
Wow.
I know.
How old of you guys.
I know. Mm. Pretty wild, huh?
Such wisdom.
I know. Yeah, pretty fun birthday weekend. It's really funny because when we were expecting Addison, we knew that she was going to be due in the end of October, and I'm pretty sure like the announcement photo that we put up like when we knew that we were going to have her, I knew that she was going to come sometime around my birthday. And I was like, if you happen to come on my birthday, it's completely fine. You can have it. Like, it'll be your birthday.
Uh-huh.
And it is absolutely hilarious because Addison is determined for it to not be my birthday. The day before her, she's like, well, it can't be your birthday today because my birthday needs to come first. And then mm-hmm. we can have your birthday.
Mm-hmm.
Even though mine is technically the day before.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, this is a great example, Ben, where like you're like, you can just have it. And it's like, on the other hand, maybe you should treat yourself like you treat Addison, you know?
Oh, like I should have my own birthday.
Yeah, like you should be, it's okay. You don't have to be like, I got give it up because it's, you know, Addison's more important or whatever.
Right.
And it's like, you know, like you, that, you don't, you, like no one's making you do that. You can have a good birthday too.
Well, there's that. There's yeah. that.
You
yeah.
can have a good birthday and Addison's birthday can be really important.
Right. Yeah. Well, and I think ultimately that's what happened.
Yes.
You know, it was, yep. It seemed pretty great. I got to see my friends. I was booked us a massage.
Mm-hmm.
I got to go on a grand adventure with Addison where we went and picked up all of our materials for her birthday the next day.
Yep.
So it was great.
Yes. Yes, it was.
Yeah. We did good. We did good. And Addison had a really fun birthday party.
She did. We were there most of the day. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Good times. Anyway, guys, I think that's all for this week, but thank you so much for tuning in as always. And a special thank you to everybody who reached out to me after last week's episode. I got just so many really heartfelt messages from the community, which is just honestly it's really awesome. I think that I definitely have said it in the past, but I love that, you know, if there's anything that we do here on The Pop that helps people, I can say with complete honesty that the people who listen do the same in return.
There you go.
So very, very grateful for that. If you have any feedback for the show, you can send it over to popcornculturepod@gmail.com. Or if you'd like to support the show, you can do so at patreon.com/popcornculture. But otherwise, until next time.
Pop, pop.
Today's episode was edited by Isabel Chrisley. Vaishon Brandon does our art. Catherine Stein is our production manager. And the show is hosted by me and Jonathan Carlin.